So as you flip over to 1 Samuel chapter 14, I want to tell you about a lady. Well, she was a girl at the time. Her name was Julianne Koepka. Her, in 1971, she was flying on an airplane until she wasn't flying on an airplane. That plane crashed, and she actually survived. Not only did it, she fell 2 miles out of the sky, landed in the Amazonian jungle, and survived. And then for the next 10 days, tried to find anybody that could help her. And spent 10 days kind of roaming as she was able through the jungle, looking for another human being. Meanwhile, maneuvering through waters that had both crocodiles and piranhas in them. And yet, she survived. After 10 days of in the jungle, she was discovered by a group of Peruvian lumberjacks who were able to get her to safety and get her to a hospital and to where she needed to be. But she, in this moment, beat some very long odds, right? Just unbelievable. And there's something inspirational when we hear a story or we see someone who overcomes long odds to survive or to have victory. It's inspirational to hear about her, that she was thrown into a situation that happened to her and yet was able to survive and to have life after such an incredible tragedy and thing that happened. But as amazing it is when we hear stories of circumstances that happen to someone, I always find it interesting and it maybe even more inspirational when you see someone who willingly enters into a circumstance that is long odds. Like incredibly long odds for her to survive a plane crash and to survive for 10 days in the jungle. Incredible. But then there are stories where I hear people who see the long odds, see the hard road ahead, and they go, yep, I'll sign up for that. I was reminded of a story of a guy named Rudy Rudiger. They made a movie about him, and that's his story, right? He has the desire to play football for Notre Dame. The problem is he's not very good at football. But another big problem for him is he's not even very good at school. He's not even able to get in to the very university that he wants to attend so that he could then try out for the football team. And so it is with incredibly long odds. It is against all odds that he begins this journey, even though everybody he knows, both who love him and who don't like him, are going, it's never going to happen. You might as well not even try. You should do something that's a little more on your level. Just go get a job. And he continues to go, nope, I'm going to try. Nope, I'm going to try. And so it's against all odds that he starts where he needed to start, which happened to be the school across the street, to be able to get the grades that he needed to be able to get into University of Notre Dame. And then when he's there, he begins trying out for the football team. And against all odds, he keeps trying despite rejection and disappointment. But there comes a day where against all odds, he suits up for the Fighting Irish, finds his way onto the field and became a contributing member of that team as he gets a chance to play for the Fighting Irish. The title of today's message is Against All Odds. Because the reality is this, there are times in our lives where God leads us into a situation that appears from our perspective to be bleak and unwinnable. The odds are stacked against us, and yet God is walking us right into the jungle. This is precisely the situation that the Israelite army finds themselves in that we looked at last week in chapter 13. Remember, the Philistine army is around, surrounding them. There's over 30,000 of them. The Israelite army has been whittled down to 600. And they're hanging out. They're isolated from any help that they may have. They don't have weaponry. All they have are farming tools. It said last week that there were only two people who had swords and shields. It was the king and his son, Jonathan. Everybody else is without what we would consider a necessary, useful weapon. And yet, in battle, seems to be any day now. It's impending. It's going to happen. So in chapter 14, we begin to see what happens. Just as a little side note, the chapter 13 to 14 is not chronologically or geographically, they're separate. So it's not like chapter 13 happened on a Tuesday and chapter 14 happened on Wednesday. It's not like chapter 13 happened specifically in Anderson Township and then chapter 14 happened at the same spot in Anderson Township. But the circumstance is the same. The situation of chapter 13 is the situation of chapter 14, which is this mighty, gigantic Philistine army has surrounded the small army from Israel and is in any day now, battle is going to ensue. And that's where we pick up the story in 1 Samuel chapter 14, starting in verse 1. It says, "One day Jonathan, the son of Saul, said to the young man who carried his armor, 'Come, let us go over to the Philistine garrison on the other side.' But he did not tell his father. Saul was staying in the outskirts of Gibeah in the pomegranate cave at Migron. The people who were with him were about 600 men, including Ahijah, the son of Ahitub, Ichabod's brother, son of Phinehas, son of Eli, the priest of the Lord in Shiloh, wearing an ephod. The people did not know that Jonathan had gone. Within the passes by which Jonathan sought to go over to the Philistine garrison, there was a rocky crag on the one side and a rocky crag on the other side. The name of the one was Bozez and the other was Sina. The one crag rose up on the north in front of Michmash and the other on the south in front of Geba." These are the two towns where the armies are currently situated. The Philistines are in Michmash, Israelites are in Geba. Verse 6 says, "Jonathan said to the young man who carried his armor, 'Come, let us go over to the garrison of these uncircumcised. It may be that the Lord will work for us, for nothing can hinder the Lord from saving by many or by few.' And his armor bearer said to him, 'Do all that is in your heart. Do as you wish. Behold, I am with you, heart and soul.' Then Jonathan said, 'Behold, we will cross over to the men, and we will show ourselves to them. If they say to us, "Wait until we come down to you," then we will stand in our place and we will not go up to them. But if they say, "Come up to us," then we will go up, for the Lord has given them into our hand, and this shall be the sign to us." So both of them showed themselves to the garrison of the Philistines, and the Philistines said, "Look, Hebrews are coming out of the holes where they have hidden themselves." And the men of the garrison hailed Jonathan and his armor bearer and said, "Come up to us. We will show you a thing." And Jonathan said to his armor bearer, "Come up after me, for the Lord has given them into the hand of Israel." Then Jonathan climbed up on his hands and his feet, and his armor bearer after him. And they fell before Jonathan, and his armor bearer killed them after him. And then after that first strike with Jonathan and his armor bearer made, they killed about 20 men within, as it were, a half furrow's length in an acre of land. And there was panic in the camp, in the field, and among all the people. The garrison and even the raiders trembled, and the earth quaked, and it became a very great panic. So our big idea this morning from these 15 verses is that God will lead His followers into situations that seem against all odds. You see, we serve a God who likes to overcome the odds. He's not intimidated by them because He already knows the outcomes. He overcomes the odds for our benefit. He does it so that people can know that it was Him. He does it so that we can learn more about Him in the process. And He does it so that our trust in Him can deepen. Scripture is filled with situations in which God works and He moves on the behalf of a group of individuals who is operating against all odds. So why this matters for you and I today is that if you are a follower of God, that you need to accept the fact that this is going to happen instead of spending your time hoping that it won't happen. Because God is going to, there will be times and seasons in our life where He walks us in to the jungle. He walks us in to a moment where we're surrounded on all sides. When He walks us into a moment where we're going, there's no way, it's against all odds. I don't know how, I don't know what to do next. And yet God's saying, just trust me, walk with me as we go into a situation. So instead of trying to pray our way out of it, maybe we need to pray ourselves into it and be willing to follow Him. So just go ahead and accept the fact that this is one of the things that God does. It's not a bad thing, it's a good thing. It's for your benefit. And so because it's a reality for a follower of Jesus, we want to identify four elements that will be required. If I'm going to walk into a situation that the watching world will go, man, those are long odds. That's never going to happen. This will be interesting to see how this turns out. I can't believe they're attempting that. That's crazy that they would try to be that or to do that or be in that place. So there, I'm going to identify four elements that are there. These won't always be there, but in a lot of times when we find ourselves walking in a situation that requires faith against all odds, these are traits and elements that will be present or required for us to be obedient as we follow God into that situation. The first one is that we've got to be willing to go alone. It will include going alone. Let's look again at verse 1. It says, "One day Jonathan, the son of Saul, said to the young man who carried his armor, 'Come, let us go over to the Philistine garrison on the other side.' But he did not tell his father." Now, as someone else named Jonathan, I can identify with this. That was a lot of my life. He didn't tell his father. He just went off and he did it. That's what Jonathan does in this moment. They're sitting on, the picture is this. There's this gigantic gorge that separates Jonathan and his men from the Philistine army. And it, not the whole army, not the 30,000, but a small little garrison. It's at about 20 men that are in this little little spot on the other side. And it's like you can see them. And every day we get out and we do what we do and we look across and we can see what they're doing over there. And so finally it's as if he had just had enough. And he's like, "We've got to do something. Let's go. Let's make a move. Let's take action." And he goes alone. The action begins with Jonathan initiated a small covert military mission independently of his father. It was a bold move. It was risky, but it was faith-driven. Why would I say that? Verse 6 gives us a glimpse into his heart and the lens through which he's looking at this situation. Look at verse 6. He says to the young man carrying his armor, "Let's go over to the garrison of these uncircumcised." That's the key word here. That's the word that kind of unlocks the box for us. What he's saying is that they are not like us. They are not people of God. They are opposed to him. They worship a different God. They are not a part of the family of God. And so we learn from this verse, the lens through which he's looking at it is one where he cares more about what happens to God's name than he does to his name. And so the idea of going over and taking initiative and maybe going over to attack is not for his fame and for his glory, but for the defense of the name of Yahweh, of the one true God. See, his mission is an attempt to defend the name of the living God. He's acting upon a conviction. And if you and I are going to operate upon our convictions, we must be willing to go alone. Because you will find yourself sometimes acting upon a conviction that's not a conviction of someone else. And it may be one that's built on Scripture, or it may be one that God's given just for you, for a season of life. Hey, I want you to not be a part of that for the next 6 months. I want you to abstain from that for the next 6 months. I don't want you to do this, or I want you to be about this. It may be something he's given directly to you that he hasn't given to everybody else. So for you to be obedient, you've got to be willing to do it alone. Abram was told to go to a land that God would show him, and he only went with his immediate family. He basically went alone. David fought Goliath alone. Queen Esther stands before the king, risking life because she went when she wasn't supposed to go, and if he were to reject her, he could have her killed on the spot. She went alone. Daniel was thrown into the lion's den because he was praying to Yahweh, and he was thrown in alone. Paul went on three major gigantic missionary journeys, and the whole church that he belonged to didn't go with him. Typically, only a few folks went. There was usually somebody that was kind of his partner that they would go and do it together, and maybe a small group of people that would go, but typically they would go alone. Sometimes we have to go alone because we're going somewhere that others don't want to go. If we were thinking about the circumstance for Jonathan, for the armor bearer, remember the 30,000 person army is on the other side of the gorge. And so had he let other people know what he was about to do, the likelihood is that he still would have gone alone because he would have tried to rally the troops and they're like, "Yeah, I don't think I'm signing up for that. I think we'll stay on this side. If you want to go, that's fine, but we're going to stay over here." But I want to remind us this morning that victory will always be found on the other side. Victory will be found on the other side of fear. It'll be found on the other side of rejection. It's found on the other side of sacrifice. It's found on the other side of offense. When someone's hurt you, when someone's made you mad, victory is found on the other side of that. Victory is found on the other side of your street. Maybe found on the other side of town. Victory is found on the other side of the world. There are all different places that God may be sending you along the way. And in order for you to have victory in that, you've got to be willing to go to the other side. Many people are not willing to take these journeys. So if we are willing, then we've got to be willing to go alone. A second thing that we see is that it will include being contrary. We see that in verses 8, 9, and 10. In verses 8, 9, and 10 is where we get the strategy for what Jonathan's going to do. He makes the decision to attack. It's driven by faith, but his strategy defied logic. It didn't make a lot of military sense. Let's look at it again in verse 8. He says, "We'll cross over to the men and we will show ourselves to them. And if they say to us, 'Wait until we come to you,' then we will stand still in our place and we will not go up to them. But if they say, 'Come up to us,' then we will go up, for the Lord has given them into our hand. This shall be a sign to us." So his strategy is this. We're going to go down into the gorge. As we begin to climb up, we're going to make ourselves known to the enemy. So that's number one. They're going to give up the surprise. They're just going to go ahead and announce, "Here we are. How you doing? We'd like to have a conversation." The second thing that makes no military sense is that they're going to, they want to allow their enemy to keep the high ground. So his plan is this: we're going to make ourselves known. If they come down to us and it's an equal playing field down in the gorge, then we're not going to fight. But if they keep the high ground and they invite us up, then we're going to go fight. So it didn't make any sense. We're going to give up the element of surprise. We're going to let them keep the high ground, and yet we're still going to attack. And in this moment, with this logic, with this strategy, Jonathan is acting as a contrarian. Now, the definition of contrarian is a person who holds or expresses views that oppose the accepted or the majority opinion. So a contrarian is someone who's willing to go against the grain. They're willing to be independent in their thoughts. Now, there is always a temptation to do things the way it's always been done, but a contrarian is willing to do something new or in a different way. And why is that important for us? Because God specializes in doing a new thing. That's what he said through the prophet Isaiah when he was going to let people know about the coming Messiah. "Behold, I'm doing a new thing." He specializes in doing new things. And he may just ask us to do something in a way that is different from everyone else. And we have to decide if we'll be willing to use a strategy that no one else is willing to use. But a contrarian, it's important to be willing to be a contrarian, but we don't do it just for the sake of being different. There is an opportunity to be a contrarian so that all eyes are fixed on you. Everybody's dressed one way, I'm going to dress a different way so everybody notices that I'm different. Everybody's doing this, well, I'm going to do something different. Why? So that everybody goes, "Look at that guy, he's doing it different." There's a temptation to be contrarian just to be contrary so that you get all the focus. And that's not the goal. We are contrarian for the sake and the glory and the honor of Jesus. And if I'm obedient to what he's asking me to do, his expectations, his directions to me, his promptings of me will lead me in a life that is contrary to the world. It's going to be different. And that's okay. That's the type of contrarian that we want to be. So when he's leading me into a situation where the watching world will go, "That's crazy. Those odds are terrible. I would never attempt that." That's the kind of contrarian we want to be. Because we're walking in faith of obedience to where he is leading us. So if we're going to be a person who walks with God against all odds, we've got to be willing to go alone. We've got to be willing to be contrary. A third that we see is that we've got to be willing to overcome hard. It will include overcoming hard. In order to attack the Philistines, Jonathan and his armor bearer would have to traverse rugged terrain. If we were to go back to verse 4 and 5, it talks about the name of these rock formations. So this is a place where people were familiar with. They lived there. The locals had names for these two rock formations on each side of this gorge. One was a word that meant thorny, and one was a word that meant slippery. So for them to go over and make this attack, they were going to have to traverse two different rock formations that were named thorny and slippery. The picture here is that there was going to be hard work involved. This wasn't going to be easy. They hadn't already predetermined all the footholds on the rock wall. They weren't going with a rope on belay. It was going to be hard work. It was going to be dangerous. And they were going to have to overcome hard in order to be able to even attack the enemy. Can I remind us today that life as a follower of Jesus is hard work? It's hard work to daily participate in spiritual disciplines like Bible reading, prayer, and serving other people. It's hard work to operate in the fruit of the Spirit, like love and joy and peace and patience and kindness. It can be hard work to help other people. It's hard work to share the gospel. It's hard work to live on mission. But if I'm in Christ, then I need to be here for the hard work. I need to embrace it. I don't run from it. I lean into it. I welcome it. That was one of the things we talked about all summer long with the Gen Senders. It became kind of a rallying cry. We're here for the hard work. We're here for the hard work. When it was hard and when it was nerve-wracking and when it was scary and we were unsure, that's what they would say. We're here for the hard work. Just this last week, I was having a conversation with one of the girls that was on this team this summer. She's trying to figure out her next steps as she gets ready to graduate college. And she's looking at an internship. And she was just asking some questions of Mandy and I as she was trying to think about and decide what it is the Lord is telling her. And it was a beautiful picture of this, because she just wants to be obedient. She just wants to hear from the Lord and by faith step in what He's given her to do next. And so she was putting in the work. She was spending time in the Word, seeking the Father. She was spending time in prayer, trying to hear His direction. She made a decision this week to say no, not knowing what the next thing was, because she felt like that's what God was saying. So she sent us a message and said, just want to let you know, here's the decision I made. Thanks for encouraging us in the process. But all I could really hear in our conversation with her was the hard work. That was like she was giving herself to the process. It wasn't a willy-nilly decision. She had spent time seeking the face of the Father, trying to be obedient. I'm reminded of what Isaiah said on his last Sunday here before he went back to Louisiana to get married. When he talked about coming to spend a year with us, you remember what he said? He said, this was the hardest thing I've ever done in my life. You remember the next thing he said? It's also the best thing I've ever done in my life. Following Jesus at times is hard work, but at all times, it's the best possible thing that you could ever do. It's in the hard work where growth happens. You know, growth never happens by accident. It's a byproduct of obediently following Jesus and His instructions. The outputs that we experience are directly tied to the inputs. That principle of sowing and reaping came up in our verses as we prayed today, that as I sow seeds, I will reap. I can't live apart from that principle. Whatever I give myself to will be the thing that I reap. If I'll sow seeds of diligent obedience to the Father, then I will reap the benefits of obediently following Him. But it's not just enough to be in the right place. I have to do the right thing. If I want to get stronger, so I decide I'm going to go to the gym, it's not enough to go to the gym. I actually have to do something while I'm there. I can't just get a coffee and talk to people. I've got to actually lift something heavy. And that's how I grow stronger. The way we grow stronger as a follower of Jesus is we put in the work. I get into the Word on a regular basis. I spend time in prayer, not just on Sunday when we do it together, but by myself. I try to be obedient to the things that God has called me to do. And over time, growth happens. Over time, I mature in my walk with Him. Over time, I begin to look more like Jesus. And those fruit of the Spirit begin to be more evident in my life. And my family enjoys being around me more because I'm more pleasant. And I'm more fun to be around. So for Jonathan and his armor bearer, the attack was going to be hard work physically. They were literally going to have to ascend down into the gorge, climb up the other one. It was going to be hard circumstantially. As they are climbing up towards the enemy, surely the enemy is firing things down upon them. So they're like, because they said, we have something to show you. My guess is they were talking trash, like, come on up here and see what you're going to get. So they decide to go. So they're attacking and they're hailing things down on them as they're trying to climb up. But the hard work, the attack was also going to be hard work emotionally. Because he doesn't know what's going to happen. He says, God can give us the victory. Perhaps he'll act on our behalf. But he doesn't know that he knows that he knows. They may be climbing to their death. And that it's uncertain. So there's an emotional toil. It was hard to make that decision to go. But let's not miss the fact that both Jonathan and his armor bearer were ready and able to make the climb. They had stayed ready, so when the moment came, they could go. What we don't see in this story is a Rocky montage of Jonathan and his armor bearer working out on the beach, getting ready for a fight that's coming in 6 weeks. What we see is him deciding, yep, it's time, we're going to go. That's what they do. And they were able to do that because they were ready. When it comes to being ready to what God wants to do next, we tend to desire notice when God often provides a note. And what do I mean by that? In the acting world, the director will give a note to an actor in a scene of something's going on. He'll have a note and it'll say something to the effect, this is how we want to change this. We want to tweak this. I want you to do this differently. And the expectation is for that actor that they can take that note and implement that right now. They don't go home for a month and work on that note. They might get to go back to their trailer. They might just get a minute or two, and then the expectation is that they're going to be able to adjust and take that note, take that coaching, and put it into play in that moment. And the reason why they can do that is because of all of the preparation that has come up until that point. All of the stuff that actor has, or actress has done to get ready for this movie allows them to be able to change on the fly, be able to change in a moment. The same thing is true for us. As we daily give ourselves to the Lord, as we daily walk in obedience, we're preparing ourselves, we're staying ready so that when He gives us a note, and in a moment's notice, He wants us to change direction. In a moment's notice, He wants us to go across the street and introduce ourselves to our neighbor. In a moment's notice, He wants us to sign up for a thing or help that person that's standing on the road with the sign. Whatever the thing is, we're able to do it. We take the note and we act accordingly because we are ready. We work hard in the daily disciplines of faith so that we can take faith steps and engage in the battles that are before us. If we're not willing to embrace hard, we will miss out on the experience of God's power that's required for us to overcome. So if we're going to walk into situations that are against all odds, we got to be willing to go alone. It may include being contrary. It will include overcoming hard. And fourth and finally, it will include experiencing victory. There is a payoff. It will work out. Maybe not in this life, but in the next. But thankfully, we get to experience some of those victories along the way. We see that in verses 14 and 15 for Jonathan and his armor bearer. It says that they go down in the gorge, they climb up, they go, and they immediately begin to fight, and they defeat all 20 men that are in that small little space. It says in about a half an acre. So they make quick work of this group. And the response of the Philistines reminds us the source of the victory. Look at verse 15 with me again. It says, there was panic in the camp. So just past this small little outpost was a larger outpost for the Philistine army. And it says that when word spread of this victory, from 2 defeating 20, that fear spread among the people. Panic in the camp, in the field, and among all the people. The garrison and even the raiders trembled. The earth quaked and it became a very great panic. It's a reminder to us that it was God who brought the victory. Jonathan and the armor bearer are obedient. They take action. They go on faith. God is the one who brought the victory. The response of the people who are against God of panic is a reminder that it was God who was at work. And you almost get this sense that they're looking at this and like, oh goodness, if two just defeated 20, that may mean that their God is going to win this. And we're on the wrong side of this. And panic and trembling began to pervade in their ranks because they realized that Yahweh was on the move. And the victory that Jonathan experienced was always attached to God. It started there in verse 6 when he referred to them as being an uncircumcised people, that they are outside of the family of God. He attacked against all odds, believing that God would move. God responded. He gave Jonathan the victory. See, God delights to work against all odds. Going against the odds will not ensure victory, but refusing to go against the odds will ensure a lack of victory. So just because you step into a situation where the odds are long, it doesn't mean that beyond a shadow of a doubt, you're going to experience victory in that thing. But I can guarantee you that if you're never willing to walk in faith and step into a situation where the odds are long, you won't experience victory. Because a lot of what God wants to do are going to be in circumstances that look long, that look hard, that look unwinnable, because He specializes in beating the odds. If we fail to live generously, we will never experience the victory of God blessing a cheerful giver. If we fail to share the gospel, we will never see the victory of people coming to know Jesus. If we fail to go to the other side of an offense, we will never see the victory of reconciliation. Victory is found on the other side of walking by faith. Because if we know how something's going to turn out, then it doesn't require a lick of faith. So as we draw to a close this morning, may we accept the notion that God is going to lead His people into situations where the odds seem long. Let's stop wasting our energy trying to avoid these moments and use our energy and resources to step into them wholeheartedly, believing the same thing that Jonathan said. Perhaps the Lord will deliver us. Perhaps the Lord will do a thing that only He can do. Because against all odds is where our faith grows. Against all odds is where God's power is visible. And against all odds is where God receives the glory. Let's pray together in this place.